Welcome back to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone, filling in for the incomparable George Norrie. And let me tell you, it is a pleasure to be back. Now, I hosted last month, and it was a pretty incredible show. We talked about the Bosnian Pyramid, and I'm still getting emails about that. It was what many are calling a landmark show. And today, I think I've got another one in store for you. There's a whole controversy swelling around some of the comments made by the director of the Minnesota Planetarium Society, Park Kunkel, who talked about the astrological zodiac signs and how they've shifted over the past 1,000 years, and maybe what people think of their sign is not correct anymore. The Earth has been moving and spinning, and it's throwing everything off its axis. And what we're coming to realize now is that maybe we're not a Pisces or a Sagittarius or anything else. Maybe we're 1 month different. That's the information that's coming forward. And it's really not just about people's own personal journey into the stars, but when you take a look at astrology, it has a significant bearing on world events. What do I mean by that? Well, who's Joan Quigley? Remember her? She was the astrologist that Nancy and Ronald Reagan used quite a bit during their administration. And they're not the only ones. Remember, astrology has been around a lot longer than astronomy. It has guided kings and queens as long as they have been walking the earth. There seems to be an essential tie-in to the movements of the planets and the stars and how we are affected by them. I mean, the tide, for example, comes in, comes out. It's a very powerful force. And that is directly controlled by the moon hovering so far above us. So is it any wonder that we ourselves, being mostly water, are not affected by the movements of the planets, the moons, and the stars also? It is going to tie in directly to the events in the Middle East and much, much more. Our guest is Mark Lerner, astrologist, graduate of Michigan State University. He's going to come on and tell us what all of this is all about and what it means to you right when we come back. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. And, you know, this is a subject that I've always been fascinated about. I've met many people who seem to have a real knack for telling people their lives, what's going to happen to them based on when they were born. But it goes much deeper than that. It seems as though our predictions have been based on faulty evidence. Let me give you a quick snapshot of what I'm talking about and where this controversy has come from. The Earth is much like a spinning top. Whenever you spin a top, it sort of wobbles. That's exactly what happens. And this wobble effect takes about 26,000 years to go all the way around. It's called precession. So in ancient Babylonia, which is where astrology had its roots, they were going under a different set of stars. They actually had 13 constellations that they were going by, and the North Pole was not where it was. In fact, ships, planes, they all have their compass set on the North Pole, and the North Star, Polaris, is where the Earth's axis, a pole that goes directly through the Earth, points to. But 3,000 years ago, it wasn't. It was a star called Thuban, which is Arabic for snake. It's also called Alpha Draconis. Now, back then, that was the North Star. That was the center of the universe in the night sky. And that's what they based astrology on. So it's only after all this time, with the wobble in the Earth, and who knows, maybe the many nuclear explosions that mankind has laid upon the Earth, that things are not what they used to be. So do we have to revamp our whole notion of how things are lining up out there? It just might be the case. This is a subject that goes far beyond personal readings. Again, it goes into predictions, which have served mankind so well. We're going to talk about the unrest in the world. We're going to talk about how these stars can manifest different meanings for world events. And to do that, we're going to bring on our guest, Mark Lerner. Mark, welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you, Rob.
Did I give an accurate description on this procession and this controversy that has come out of the University of Minnesota?
Not really, but it was a good try. I mean, I think you covered a lot of ground, but there's it's basically something that, unfortunately, astronomers every so often come out of the woodwork who have never studied astrology. They often refuse to study it. In fact, one of the great minds of our last century was Carl Sagan, and he was brilliant, and he was a great novelist and great scientific pioneer, but he was also one of the great detractors of astrology. And so what happens is that the astronomers who never study astrology, they don't realize that for the last 1900 years, Western astrology has been based on simply dividing the year, starting at the spring equinox, into 12 equal divisions. And the confusion comes in, Rob, just so you know, is that in the East, what is considered sidereal or constellational astrology related to the actual star groups that are actually illusions, okay? Because, you know, if you look at the Great Bear, the seven stars, the Big Dipper, they're not all in the same place. We know through astronomy and through science that any of the constellations, they're an apparent grouping. And what's happened is over thousands of years, and you're right about one thing, the ancient consciousness of human beings would look up, and let's say what we call Aries, they would see what looked like Ram, because there were certain stars that were configured. And so a sort of imaginative creation about the Ram and its archetypes and what it meant to human beings, and then the same thing with the stars connected to the Bull. So we were kind of drawing these pictures throughout thousands of years. And those constellations or star groups are actually where, from the Earth's viewpoint, the sun appears to move in this kind of narrow band in the sky.
Well, let me just ask you quickly about the North Pole, the Polaris. 3,000 years ago, that wasn't the closest star to the northern axis. Is that right?
Absolutely right. Now, and this gets into something. For instance, one of my main teachers is somebody, if a lot of your listeners who study astrology, they may hear recognize the name Dane Rudyard. He was a great pioneer in astrology. And his teacher was Dr. Mark Edmund Jones. And at many of the conferences, some of the listeners out there, if they've ever gone to an astrology, there's a Mark Edmund Jones Award for people who make scientific and mathematical breakthroughs in astrology. Well, people like Dane Rudyard and Dr. Mark Edmund Jones and many other great astrologers of the last 100 years and even before, they understood that about the wobbles. And in fact, Dane Rudyard talks much more about this polar cycle that you're talking about. See, the precession of the equinox, this kind of backward motion of our springtime relative to the different star groups. First of all, get this. At about 140 BC, there was a fellow named Hipparchus, and he actually figured out the precession of the equinox. We're talking like over 2,100 years ago, to within 4 seconds of time.
Well, this was not something that was quite common. I think there's only a few civilizations that were able to do that, right? The Mayans and perhaps the Egyptians?
Well, yeah. Actually, this is extremely amazing from what you were saying in your introduction with the current events going on in Egypt today. Turns out that the main person who created or sustained Western astrology, which is simply dividing the year, starting at our spring equinox into 12 equal divisions, was a fellow named Claudius Ptolemy, who lived between 100 and about 178 AD. So this is about 1800 to 1900 years ago. And he's the one in Egypt, of all places, in Alexandria, right where so much of the violence between Alexandria and Cairo is happening right now. This is the person who formulated the astrology that still works with all the correct dates that everybody's familiar with. And what the astronomer from Minnesota confused, and you have to understand this, and I do feel for him in a certain way. I don't know if you've ever had one, but there may be a lot of listeners out there who are into astrology, but maybe somewhere on their computer is an astronomy planetarium-type software program, and many of those came out in the last 10 years. And just like astrologers now use advanced scientific software, so do astronomers. But what astronomers are looking at are stars and magnitudes, and they're very interested in constellations. But we're not in Western astrology. Okay, that is an astrology that's more associated with India. And I'm not saying that certain people don't actually practice it. There's a form called Vedic astrology. And they will often use what is called the sidereal or constellational astrology. But I can tell every listener, do not change the dates. If you've always thought you were a sun sign Cancer, you are still. If you have thought you have Aries rising and your chart has been done by a professional astrologer, and you know your time of birth, your charts are accurate.
Okay? Well, let me ask you this. There seems to be a idea that these astronomers use 13 constellations to reckon the sun's position. And the 13th being this Ophiuchus, which is part of the ancient Babylonian gestalt of using these, calculating the universe. Is there any truth or bearing on the 13 constellations rather than the 12 that are used today?
Well, even if that was the case, in other words, when you go way back in time, you have to remember that what is called the 12 signs or the 12 constellations and star groups, those various names. For instance, this one called Ophiuchus, however it's pronounced, is situated in such an area that it's around the Scorpio-Sagittarius zone. And I guess when the Minnesota astronomer had his day in the public and was interviewed, I guess it was by the Minneapolis Star, and then that was taken by all kinds of news media, then somebody, it may have been him, said, by the way, here are the new birthday groups. And this was tantamount to kind of almost treason, because again, all I can tell you, and this is very important, this is not a man who studied Western astrology. If he ever understood it, if he actually ever studied it, if he worked with the books that we use, which are based on the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, where we keep refining and getting things more and more exact. So in the Eastern constellational zodiac, when we look out from the Earth, in other words, the sun appears to move around various bands of these star groups, like you said. But this is the ancient form of astrology, and out there in the Sagittarius Scorpio zone where the sun moves, there's another group of stars that's sort of there, it's sort of close by. And what happens is when an astronomer is like working with his planetarium program on the software, he's looking up in the heavens, he'll see this other group and he'll suddenly say something like, these astrologers, they're all a bunch of kooks, because don't they realize that there's this other star group? Therefore, there's actually 13 of them. So
right.
Let's make 13 and let's change the dates. And we know that astrology is a pseudoscience anyway, so let's just have a little fun. And you know what happened in all this is not only did the person who did this kind of work, and again, I don't feel like I should be here defending astrology, and I have a very good sense of humor, but I had to write on the front of my website on Earth Aquarius News. It's, in fact, if folks go there later or whenever they want to visit, they'll see a very succinct statement just below the little intro to the radio listeners of Coast to Coast, and I spell out exactly what I'm telling
right.
you. Do not change the date.
Well, okay, but let me ask you this. Let's fast forward to, say, 5,000 years from now. Will people still be calculating their astrological charts in the same way they are today? In other words, if I had a software program from 1998, would that still be functional 5,000 years from now?
The only reason it wouldn't, if we had something much different than the Minnesota astronomer, like if the Earth was actually knocked off, you know, its axis somehow, not according to nutation and wobbles. The first book that I've read, The Astrology of Personality, the first main one that made me into a professional astrologer, by Dane Rudjar, in 1936, which is 74 years ago, anybody can look it up, he quotes a scientist and astronomer, all the things that the Minnesota guy thinks he just figured out is written in our astrology books clearly that we all understand 74 years ago. This is something that 38 years ago when I became a professional astrologer was one of the main things. The stuff you're talking about, the polar cycle, which is 26,000 years. See, the whole precession of the equinox, this kind of backwards motion of our spring times, which start each year, going backwards in the signs every 2,000 years, the age of Aries 2,000 plus years ago, the age of Pisces that we've been going through, the so-called Aquarian age that we're about to go through for another 2,000 years, these are all actual ramifications of the cycle you're talking about, that the Earth is like a spinning top and its point, the North Pole is pointing at different stars. For instance, we haven't even hit Polaris exactly yet as far as the exact North Pole. And in about 5,000 future years and beyond now, like you talked about in the future, we'll have a different pole star. It won't be Polaris because the Earth will have its north pole pointing elsewhere, but we'll still have the same charts as long as the Earth has not moved off its orbit.
Well, a lot of people are very interested in this because of what it means to them, what it means to their life, and how they can explain certain personality traits. Is it safe to say that when you're born, you're imprinted with your particular sun sign, moon rising, and all of that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, here's what people really need to understand, because this is if people get this, it is a revolutionary concept. You don't have a chart. A chart is not a piece of paper. A chart is not something you look at on a computer screen. A chart is your aura. It's your electromagnetic field. The planets are not planets. They represent archetypal energies that are part of each human being. And by the way, and again, this is my personal slant, I happen to believe each one of us is a soul and a spirit fundamentally, that we're born at a certain moment of time and that there are no accidents, that somehow on some higher level, and I also am a believer, and I accept reincarnation from having studied different world religions, and I don't force people that they have to accept that. But astrology works very well if one keeps an open mind to that possibility, because then whenever a person is born at a month, day, and year, at a specific time in a particular place, the question is, why are you incarnating and taking your first breath at that moment?
And
the planets become a kind of archetypal aura or energy field. You might even consider it a spiritual genetic code of your higher destiny or what you're trying to fulfill in this lifetime.
Yeah, like a cosmic code. Well, let me ask you this, because this is something I've always wondered about. Is this impression, this first imprint of the stars and all the gravitational forces of the planets in three-dimensional reality around this child, is that imprint right when the child comes out or when the umbilical cord is cut?
When you take your first breath, you could come out. It's not, you know, the idea is it's the first moment of breathing. And that actually is one of the nice connections to Eastern teachings, because it's the idea of the breath is the life. Okay.
Hmm.
And the idea of because here's the difference. You're tied in with your mother, with the umbilical cord, while you're in uterine for 9 months or 9+ months. The fact that you come out of the womb, if you haven't started breathing on your own, you're still connected, therefore you're not independent of the mother.
Well, right, that's why I thought that it's when the connection is severed between the mother and the son, that's when the imprint might...
It's the first breath. If you don't start breathing, you don't live. You have to start breathing to give oxygen to yourself, otherwise you're not going to survive, because... Mm. So there's like three processes. There's coming out, there's the cutting of umbilical cord, and the first cry or the first breath. That is the
and
moment.
At that moment, wherever the planets are,
yeah.
Bam, they make some sort of imprint on you. Do you think it's the actual gravitational field interacting with the cellular structure of the human body?
Well, that's almost like beyond any of us to understand what is it, but... astrologers will say it's likened to taking a photograph of the heavens. This is why I said before, planets are not planets. People might say, Mark, you're off your rocker. What do you mean planets are not planets? What I'm trying to say, the sun, Saturn, moon, Mars, Ceres, Vesta, whatever you want to use, Chiron, they are representations. They're out there. They're real celestial bodies moving in the solar system. But in our lives, at the first breath, in your cells, in your heart that will be beating throughout your whole life until you're no longer alive, in your brain cells, how you see, in your senses, throughout your whole being, this is all imprinted.
Yeah, I know. I'm just fascinated by the when it happens, when our body receives this information. There has to be some sort of physical interaction between the physiology of the baby and the universe itself. That singular point in time is what I'm after to understand.
Carl Jung, the famous Swiss psychotherapist, who actually studied particularly marriage charting, and it's documented, it's not like, you can't find it, you can find the information. He once said, whatever is born, this may be a slight paraphrase, but it's very close to the exact thing, but of course he wrote in German, I'm using the English translation, whatever is born at a moment of time has the qualities of that moment of time. Now, that's what, if you think about that, that's exactly what you're asking. Here's what people don't realize. Time is not a convenient system to meet somebody for lunch. It's not looking back on something and saying, even, Rob or Mark were born at this time or that time. It's a power. There's an energy. There's something that we don't understand about the magic of time. And that the more we explore time, time is related mostly to Saturn, and space is mostly related to Jupiter. And this is why when you were talking about Babylonian, Chaldean observers, what they were watching a lot were the Jupiter-Saturn conjunctions that happened every 20 years, and every 7 years they'd make squares or they'd oppose each other every 10 years and so on. And this is what they watched and they calculated for hundreds of years.
Well, we're going to get into this a little bit more when we come back. We're going to take some phone calls and we're going to challenge your notion of time and who you are and your connection to the universe. You're listening to Coast AM. Stay tuned. We are back. We're talking with Mark Lerner about astrology, but the science of it, the physics of it, what does it mean to us and how does it interact with our life? And as a special treat coming up, I've asked Mark to pull the charts of President Obama, Julian Assange, and other people who are making news, and it might give us a glimpse into world events and the future of these events and how it might interact with these people who are able to really change the course of history. What does it all mean that this sun sign controversy, is it something that we've been misled? I was always told I was Capricorn, but then some astrologer told me, no, you're Sagittarius. And that's exactly what this new revelation says about the changes in the sun sign. So I'm kind of a little confused. We're going to talk with Mark. We're going to get your calls. And we're going to find out what the real truth is right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're talking about astrology. And a lot of people might not be aware that astrology has a counterpart in every major civilization going back 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years. The stars have been part of humanity's way of guiding, not only from ocean to ocean, but from life to life. Mark, I wonder, how important is someone's star sign, their moon, their Pluto, their house, different houses, their rising? Is it something that someone can rise above, or are they ultimately and always affected by it?
Well, there's a multi-part answer to this one. First of all, it's how you utilize any of these celestial bodies. In other words, most people think that astrology or what they are is a sun sign, and the sun is only one component. It's very important because the sun is so much bigger than all the other celestial bodies. But as you point out, everybody's got a moon sign. For instance, when you're born, and this may be a revelation to a lot of people, when a person is born, when you're a baby, you're really your moon sign because you can't control your life. You have to be nurtured, you have to be fed. It's normally the mother. If somehow the mother is incapacitated, doesn't survive that moment or whatever happens there, then it may be a grandparent or an aunt or whoever, and if there's no women around, it might be a father and so on. But you can't do it yourself. And the moon has much more to do with being receptive and nurturing energy, whereas the sun is more kind of stand on your own, your fundamental character, the power that animates you. And so we all grow from our moon sign into the sun sign, and the sun sign qualities and themes that most people are familiar with then are developed, particularly as you get into your teens and 20s and so on. And if you can really rise fairly high, the rising sign, which is based completely on your birth time, and that changes approximately every 2 hours, although that's an average. It depends on what latitude on the planet you're living at. But if you were living on the equator, for instance, approximately every 2 hours of time, there'd be a different rising sign. That's more of the spiritual you. It's more of a kind of higher capacity. But every planet, like you mentioned Pluto and so on, every planet has a low, middle, and high level. So you could have twins born, okay? Babies could be born within 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes. They might look a whole lot alike, and they're raised in the same family. They might have different karma. If you accept reincarnation, they could have completely different soul spiritual histories, which would give different characters and different attitudes, even though they'd be raised in the same family. But here's the other thing. Even though they were born very close in time, each one could utilize any of the celestial bodies on a low, middle, or high level, and any of the signs on a low, middle, or high level, not to mention what are called the aspects of the mathematical relationships. That's why it gets very complex when you actually do an astrological chart. You can't look at a chart and just say, this is what's going to happen to that person. They're fated to have this kind of life. It doesn't work that way.
So it's there's a lot of information to draw upon, and there's a lot to the individual insofar as what that person resonates with or is drawn to or grows into.
Yeah, and when I look back at my life, because I never thought I'd select this. When I went to Michigan State University, my dad had been a medical doctor. I went as pre-med. 6 weeks later, I was pre-law. 6 weeks after that, I was sociology major. And I learned a lot about sociology, and it's really helped me, along with psychology and metaphysics and all kinds of religious and philosophical teachings and astrology. But the sociological part of it is very, very interesting, because if you blend that and psychology with astrology, and you keep an open mind, and you add on free will, that at any given, and this gets back to the power of time. See, here's the thing. You know how, whether I'm on or some other astrologers on, and George or yourself or Ian will be asking for predictions, you know, what do you anticipate is going to happen? And astrology is often seen as a predictive tool.
Sure.
And you can use it that way, but you can never tell absolutely. Like often people say, okay, this person's very sick. Do you think they would die? Well, the way I look at things, I never see death in the sense that what if the person, through some kind of miracle, whether it's religious or spiritual or their health or some kind of other remarkable kind of thing, an angel, a UFO, who knows, where they go through a kind of life and death transformation, and what seemed to one astrologer as if the person could die because of some alignments they were looking at was really a dying to the old self and a rebirth into something else. So the old astrology was a little bit more limited when people like hundreds of years ago might look at something and they might write down in England or some of these places in Europe, you know, this is a signature of likely death. Plus, remember, a lot of the older astrologers, they didn't know that the outer planets existed. They weren't necessarily using a lot of the other ones we use, like, for instance, Chiron, a little planet between Saturn and Uranus, which takes about 50 years to orbit, and some of the asteroids or little planets between Mars and Jupiter. We use so many different things and so much scientific mathematical software. That's why it was surprising when the Minnesota astronomer said what he said, because he obviously doesn't have any friends or associates who have
who do the stuff. Well, it is surprising. When I find out what you guys do, I mean, there is a book you guys use called the Astronomical Almanac, which is put together by JPL and the California Institute of Technology. Tell us about that reference.
Well, okay, beyond that, I mean, I'm sitting here surrounded by what is called the New American Ephemeris for the 21st Century. Remember you asked what would happen in several thousand years? Would the charts be the same?
Sure.
I have here, now, assuming that there are no gigantic earthquakes, tidal waves, solar flares, asteroids hitting the Earth, as long as the Earth stays within its normal orbit with the wobbles that we all know about, the nutation, the Earth spinning on its top where the axis is slightly moving around in thousands of years.
Okay.
This is a 100-year, what's called ephemeris, so that I'm opening it up right now, and I opened the book to February of 2072. This is just on the spur of the moment.
Okay.
And this is, so how many years is that? 62 years from now? Right? Yeah, or 61 years from now, I just opened the book. All the planets are listed exactly where they're going to be, exactly to a precision based on the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, not Mark Lerner, not looking into a crystal ball, not because the astronomer thinks Ophiuchus should be added as a 13th sign. And here, by the way, here's the other problem with that whole constellational old ancient astrology. Can we all accept for the moment that star groups are apparent groupings, that they're not actually sitting there? The stars are not all together in the same location.
Yeah, it's just from our perspective that they are in close proximity.
Right. And by the way, what is my favorite magazine? Astronomy. I love astronomy. It's not that I don't study it. It's fantastic. And what astronomers are looking at, or astrologers who work with astronomy. And that's one of my pet subjects, is to bring them back together in alignment, rather than have these things happen every 20 or 30 years where somebody who hasn't studied the other one. I study astronomy. I love it. Yeah. And what you want to do is you want to remember that all those constellations are apparent. They're not really together. So this is the other thing. When the guy says, well, we have Ophiuchus out there, and that's another star group, what he's adding is a kind of magical, imaginative grouping that is not what we're doing in the West, where we're dividing mathematically from the moment of spring to the next moment of spring, 365 and a quarter days later. We divide the whole thing into 12, and we have mathematically precise things. That's why we can open a book like this, Rob, 61 years in the future, and we got the exact positions. I could do a chart for a baby born. You could say, do a chart for a baby born February 1, 2072, at 10:50 at night in Los Angeles. Right. And I'll do the chart.
Well, so evidently this something really gets your gander when someone comes out and it puts out this misleading information. But let me ask you this: I'm getting the idea how we have a personal chart, but what's the truth behind this Mercury retrograde that people talk about that seems to affect everybody, regardless of when they were born?
Okay. Every so often, from the Earth's point of view, because we're 93 million miles from the sun, particularly Mercury and Venus, both of those, because they're called inner planets. Now, Mercury is the fastest planet in motion. It can move twice as fast from our viewpoint as, let's say, what the sun appears to move. So Mercury is a very fast mover. Three times in a calendar year, it will appear from our vantage point to slow down. It will make what is called a station or stop, and then go in reverse or retrograde motion. Now, newcomers to the field of astrology, this is like a virus, Rob. This is one. Talk about the astronomer thing,
yeah,
with the flap between the constellational zodiac of apparent star groups,
sure,
and the accurate one that we're using in the West for nearly 2,000 years. The other big problems in astrology are Mercury retrograde, and it's not bad, and I'll explain why. And the other thing, which we probably shouldn't bring up today, is the void moon, another concept in astrology, but let's leave that for another day.
It sounds like a great title for a science fiction fantasy.
Well, Mercury retrograde, here's the thing. People should actually celebrate Mercury retrograde, and here's why.
Okay.
It, three times a year, you know, human beings don't stop. We're on the go, and particularly now with cell phones and everything else that we've got and the busy schedules, everybody's running around all the time. Well, Mercury will always pause every so often and then go back over the same territory in a particular sign of the zodiac, not a constellation. Let's stay focused on what we have in the West, which are 12 signs, which are the division of the seasons and the year. And what will happen is when Mercury's in reverse, you have a new opportunity to review, reflect, and reevaluate whatever Mercury rules, which are things like communications, papers, business. It has a whole lot of rulerships, but the point is...
So it's like a celestial TiVo. You get to sort of reverse and backtrack.
Like, take time out, slow down, correct your errors and mistakes.
Hmm.
Now, there is some truth to the following thing. When people say, yeah, Mark, but I don't want to sign contracts, and what if I took a trip and my luggage was lost? As if luggage is never lost when Mercury's moving forward, as if messages are never lost when Mercury's going forward.
That's true.
And what happens is that newcomers into the field are often, it's almost like an initiation, right, like in a fraternity party or a sorority party. It's like people get into astrology, they get fascinated by their sun sign, somebody says, by the way, you have such and such rising, here's your moon. They get really fascinated, and they say, well, wait until you find out about Mercury retrograde. And they'll say, well, what are you talking about? It's like, well, you can't sign papers, you can't sign contracts, you better not send letters, don't go on a trip. And it's all the planets are going periodically in reverse. Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, the outer planets, the outer four, they spend 5 months of the year in reverse.
Hmm. Okay, well, that's one myth dispelled. But let me ask you this. I've heard a lot of really good evidence that suggests that there are people in very important positions that time launchings, events. Even there's a whole book about NASA that they would plan certain launches and things that would go on auspicious dates. As far as the astrological calendar, if that's true, then aren't there dates that are more lucky or more fortuitous than others?
Oh, absolutely. Now, the question you brought up, Joan Quigley, you know, because that was one of the big, I don't know what you want to call it, scandals or surprises of the Reagan administration toward the end, you know, where suddenly it was revealed, I guess, through Donald Regan, who was chief of staff for a while for President Reagan, that Nancy Reagan was using astrology and making the president do it, you know, changing appointments with Gorbachev and talking to an astrologer. And I, as far as NASA, you know, they have made a lot of bungled things. So I don't think, maybe someone every once in a while with some astrology knowledge might poke their head in there and say, why don't we do it at such and such a time? But let's remember Challenger, I mean, and which is just being unfortunately celebrated, 25th anniversary of the explosion of the Challenger, the spacecraft, and a lot of the ones to Mars that never made it. So I don't think with NASA so much, but what is true is, of course, certain countries, there may be people like in India where they use constellational astrology in that particular reference system. They still use a lot of the star groups. There are a lot of fantastic astrologers there, and the government may be working with astrology. The formation of India, the formation of Pakistan, even it said communist China and Mao in 1949, they may have used an astrologer to pick an auspicious moment for the birth of that country, because countries have charts. That's another thing. Just like a business has a chart, a person has a chart, anything or anyone born at a moment of time has an astrology chart.
Well, just like the birth of Jesus Christ supposedly happened under a very bright star, which some people think might have been some kind of conjunction.
Right. Jupiter, Saturn, and possibly actually Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars, maybe in a triple conjunction around 7 or 6 BC, depending on how the calendar works. That's one hypothetical on that. There are so many charts that have actually been speculated for the birth of Jesus. It's a fascinating field. It would probably be a good thing to do around Christmas time.
Well, for someone who's a very pragmatic thinker, very rational thinker, and someone who may not understand or appreciate or believe in astrology, what would you say to them as far as trying to convince them that there are dates that perhaps they should look at to do certain things or not to do certain things?
Well, I'm not a person who likes to try and convince anybody of anything if they don't want to be convinced, but to put it at least one way. But in working with clients, and I'm sure this is true with so many listeners out there who may be practicing astrologers, I mean, you try and tailor your consultation to helping a person with all the things, whether it's health or travel, should they keep working at a job or not, what's going on in a relationship. There's astrological compatibility with any individual or a whole family. There's a whole science and art of what's called astrocartography and relocating people from one place to another. This has only been developed in the last 30 plus years. When I was doing Welcome to Planet Earth, our magazine, for almost 20 years, I wrote a lot of articles. When Clinton was president, we were relocating his chart from Arkansas to Washington, D.C. The same thing with Barack Obama. I know there's a big controversy with the birthers, but assuming he's born in Honolulu, Hawaii, August 4th of 61 at 7:24 at night, then he has a relocated chart for Washington. If he goes on a trip to Cairo or any place around the planet, anyone who's into what's called relocation astrology can look at his chart, like I'm looking at it on my computer screen, and move him. Like right now, you know, tonight he gives a speech about Cairo. Now he's in Washington, but we could change his chart and say, well, what does his chart look like? Were he in Cairo, because he's going to influence maybe a lot of those protesters.
Hmm. Well, what kind of predictive information have you gotten from looking up President Obama's chart?
Well, for instance, I have a blog now, and I wrote an article. Everybody thought, okay, it was kind of curtains when November hit and the Republicans had that big wave, and he said he took this real licking. And then what happened in December was that there was something called progressions. Everybody's got just so you understand the dynamics here, this could lead into the next hour. We have our natal chart, which has, as we're talking, an aura, an energy field, a kind of spiritual genetic code of our destiny. Then we have what are called transits. In other words, the planets keep moving. They don't stop. Everything keeps going. So that's what, when you ask the question, can you find something auspicious or could you prevent something negative from happening by telling a person, don't go on that big trip during that week because there's some negative alignments, or take advantage of this glorious opportunity because it's only once in 12 years. So those are called transits or cycles, and it's constantly happening, and the astrologer has to juggle those. There's another thing called progressions, and they've been around also for hundreds of years or not longer. And that's what I found around December 20th and December 22nd. There were two major what are called progressed inner sort of psychic, spiritual, evolutionary turning points for President Obama.
Okay.
And what happened was they were both auspicious, very auspicious. One was related to Jupiter, the largest planet, which has a lot to do with good fortune and success. He suddenly passed all those legislations. He was getting things happening, and people were kind of amazed, his own party, the opposition, the press. And then he had another asteroid, another planet called Ceres, which has to do with productivity on the highest level. So he suddenly, it's as if he had a gold mine. And it was an astrological thing, and I wrote about it. It's an article I have still up on the blog. And sometimes what will happen is it won't be a transit. It won't be a cycle of something moving in the sky. It'll be an inner progress thing that's going on the internal level that's changing the person's fortunes, hopefully for the good.
Hmm. Yeah, I can imagine there were some of these things are overt and easy to be seen, and some of them you have to look a little closer. I want to talk more about that when we come back. Also, I want to talk about future events, what's going on in the world, these turbulent times we're living in, the culmination of 2012, and people's love life. How can we navigate more easily through our relationships with an understanding of one of the most ancient disciplines on the planet? You're listening to Coast AM. Our guest is Mark Lerner. His website is linked up through coasttocoastam.com. More when we come back.